to another edition of Confessing Our Hope, the podcast of Greenville Presbyterian Theological Seminary. Today is June 27th, 2016, and today we have the pleasure of sitting down and talking with Dr. Chad Van Dixhorn. He was a guest on the program a while back, dealing with a book he had written on the Westminster Confession of Faith, and though we're going to be talking about that today in some sense, we're actually going to be discussing with him more precisely a class he's going to be doing at the at Greenville Seminary, our 2016 Summer Institute. And the title of the class is Ambassador, Physician, Shepherd, the Westminster Assembly and Pastoral Ministry. So we're going to get to that discussion in just a second. For those who are relatively new to the podcast, the easiest way to find out more about what we do here is to go to our website. It's confessingourhope.com. I've just updated the coming up page on the site. And so you can see that we're quite busy lining up guests and scheduling people all the way through the summer, and including three different discussions on the various general assemblies and synods that have happened in the Reformed and Presbyterian world across the country this summer. So stay tuned for those discussions. I think they'll be good and informative and helpful for the average person in the church to understand, you know, what's going on at our top level court of the church. So that's a little bit of a highlight of what's coming up on the program. There's other things as well, but again, the website is confessingourhope.com. If you want to find out more information about the seminary, including the 2016 Summer Institute, you can go to our website, gpts.edu, and there's a banner there for the Summer Institute program right there on the main page. So avail yourself of that as you're able. Now, as I mentioned, we're going to be talking with Dr. Chad Van Dixhorn about the class that's going to occur this summer. And Dr. Van Dixhorn is a Canadian-born theologian and historian, editor of the five-volume The Minutes and Papers of the Westminster Assembly, that was published by Oxford University Press. And many believe that Dr. Van Dixhorn is probably the leading scholar when it comes to not only the Westminster Standards, but the assembly, the minutes of the assembly, all the background material. He spent years dealing with these things. And so, Dr. Van Dixhorn, it's great to have you back on after a very busy week last week. And so I thank you for taking the time today to talk about this class you're going to be doing. I think it's going to be very helpful.
Thank you. Thanks for welcoming me to the podcast.
Absolutely. So, Dr. Van Dixhorn, there was some confusion a little bit in some of the mailers and brochures that went out, but you're going to be specifically dealing with the pastoral ministry, not necessarily the standards, but the Westminster Assembly. And how does that go together? I mean, what's the relationship between those two?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I'm distinguishing between a course on the Westminster Standards and a course on the Westminster Assembly. In other words, we're going to reach far beyond what the confession and catechisms have to say, and we'll be looking at what the assembly did, the actions it took, various documents it wrote, and of course the writings of the different pastors who are at the Westminster Assembly itself. And so I don't think I could teach a course on the Westminster Standards in pastoral ministry unless I was speaking about very general practices. But if I want to get into thinking more specifically and practically about pastoral ministry, it seemed to me that a course on the Westminster Assembly and pastoral ministry was very doable. So, hence the broadening of the scope.
Sure. Well, I think those four items that you mentioned may be a good place to start highlighting the class. Obviously, we don't want to teach the whole class, and we don't have the time, obviously, for that anyway. As it pertains to the participants at the assembly, and what are some of the things that they did that connects directly to pastoral work or pastoral ministry?
Great question. One of the reasons why I like thinking about the pastoral assembly, pastoral ministry and the Westminster Assembly, is that I get a chance to combine two loves, that of the historian, that of the pastor. Because the assembly, it turns out, spent more time thinking about examining ministers and candidates for the ministry than anything else that it did. The members of the assembly conducted about 5,000 examinations in their 10 years that they served England and Britain. And so, you've got this body of 100 men who's conducted about 5,000 examinations. I would think that people contemplating the pastoral ministry, those engaged in it, those examining men for the ministry, that they would find what this gathering has to say pretty interesting. I certainly have.
I wasn't even aware that actually occurred. Now, you're talking that these examinations occurred over the 10 years during the time the assembly, the standards were written, or is this...
That's right. During the 10 years that the assembly met, they conducted about 5,000 examinations. They had an examination room right next to their debating room, and men would show up with letters of testimonial, and they would be examined in theology and church history and Greek and Hebrew, and they'd have to preach a sermon before the assembly and so on.
Now, what light then, maybe this may be a little off. Well, I don't know.
How does
that information and the particulars of it help us now in the 21st century as far as what they did and what we do? And maybe compare what we do now with how they did it then.
Fair enough. So taking the examination of preachers first, the assembly offered a kind of paradigm for examining ministers, which is actually closely followed, I think, by Presbyterian churches today. They had their own practices, which they hammered out for about a year, and then they wrote a directory for ordination, which tells presbyteries how to do it. And if you look at the kinds of things that the assembly looked at the kind of things that we require in Presbyterian churches today, remarkably similar, except that we don't require men to translate Greek and Hebrew into Latin, and we don't require our candidates to give a Latin lecture. So we've made things a little easier here and there.
I'm very thankful for that.
Yeah, right. So the examinations would probably take about, a couple days. And if you add up all the examinations done for, licensure or ordination in a Presbyterian church, it could easily take a couple days. The subjects are very similar. So I think they set a benchmark. They also try and set a tone, which I think is very useful. One of the first things the Westminster Assembly did was to remind itself and others that when a guy comes before the presbytery or before the examiners, that he's to be treated as a brother before his brethren. Mm-hmm. And I don't know about you, but I've seen presbyteries where ministers just enjoy playing teacher to a student. They like to show off a little bit sometimes on a bad day, maybe do a little grandstanding, try and stump the candidate. So the Westminster Assembly, kind of aware of this human failing, starts off by saying, no, treat the guy like a brother before his brethren. And I think that's really a good insight and a helpful framing comment.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I remember it wasn't too long ago that I went through my ordination exams, and a member of the committee, told me, we're friends here, and we're here to help you. We're not here to fail you.
Yeah, that's ideal.
We don't want to fail you. I mean, that's not what we're about. And obviously, if you fail because you don't know, that's a different issue. But they're not trying to do the things that you just talked about, grandstand and try to stump me necessarily. But, and I appreciate that. It made it easier for me to relax in front of the men and, say what I know and, be willing to be corrected as needed. But, so I think that's a really important point. Now, were these exams both written and oral, or are they just exclusively oral exams?
No, I think most of the exams, would be oral. And so it's a time-consuming process. There's always about five members of the assembly in the next room, examining men, looking at their different letters of testimonial, and writing out certificates of approval or showing where a guy needs more work and so on. And so the first part of the course, the first part of the institute, will be looking at the background to the assembly and how Puritans have been longing to have some kind of a filter through which to run candidates for the ministry, some kind of sieve through which they could be sorted. So previous calls to reform, bumps along the way as opposition to a godly minister, a godly and learned ministry, started already in the time of Elizabeth. Then the course will talk about what the assembly did itself. It'll talk about what the assembly writes on the subject. It'll talk about the system that the assembly established for presbyteries. It'll talk about what the Westminster Assembly had to say about the subject of preaching. So far I've been really talking about preachers, but also has a lot to say about preaching. And then I'll want to look at what the what the assembly's members have to say. Now, not the assembly as assembly, but now the assembly's members individually in their own writings, both manuscript and print writings, have to say about preachers and preaching.
Fantastic.
What the means of grace, preaching Christ. How do you preach Christ? Different ways of doing so.
Yeah, and that's a really big subject, or at least in my circles anyway, what I've witnessed out there on the blogs and the social media, and I was heavily introduced to in seminary, preaching Christ, and you know, there's all this discussion. And so it's interesting that they were, that was also, you know, centerpiece in their minds and thinking.
Sure.
As well. Sort of men ahead of the time, I guess. But now, this is probably a question I should have asked right at the beginning. When we're talking about pastoral ministry, what exactly do you mean by that? Depending on who I ask, that could come under a whole bunch of different explanations.
Of course, there's probably no one right answer, but what I have in mind for the Institute is thinking about the character of the pastor, the preaching of the pastor, the actual shepherding, pastoral care. What's the target? What's the object? What are our tools for pastoral care? And then church government, especially with a focus on discipline. How's that to be done practically in our churches, in the presbyteries? Who does what, why, and so on? So
fantastic.
So
probably should
preaching,
take the class
pastoral
myself.
Care and church government will be the three foci, and the bulk of our time will be spent on the work of the assembly in vetting preachers, less of our time and pastoral care and shepherding. Yeah.
Fantastic. Now, we talked about what they did. How about the actions in their relationship to pastoral ministry? Or are they kind of go together?
The assembly as a whole, is that what you're asking?
Yes. Yes.
So the Westminster Divines themselves were busy preachers from week to week,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In part because Parliament really didn't pay them what they were supposed to. So in order to make a living while they were, in order to support their families while they're at the assembly, a lot of men continued to be regular preachers. I'm trying to understand the focus of your question. I guess I'm struggling a little bit.
Okay.
Pardon me for it. Maybe if you ask it a different way, I'll be able to give a better answer.
I'm sure it's my fault. The Westminster Assembly itself, we talked about the things that they did, and one of the main things was these exams, and they did 5,000 of them. Then you mentioned that there's some of their actions as it connects to pastoral ministry. I see those as similar to some extent, but is there a difference between just those things that they did as far as examining candidates, but some of their actions maybe in the middle of the assembly, but as a result of the assembly as well? That feeds the pastoral ministry work?
Well, in the sense that they write things on the subject of preaching and mm-hmm. preachers that have an impact on subsequent generations, yes. I mean, the Directory for Public Worship and its instructions on preaching become very important in the history of Puritan practical theology. So that is significant.
Absolutely.
The assembly will also was also kind of willing to resist Parliament's efforts to multiply the number of ministers, sometimes without taking enough care about quality. And so the assembly would sometimes resist Parliament and in fact anger Parliament in their unwillingness to go along with every aspect of Parliament's program. So
sure.
So there's that. So the assembly's work is very concrete. I mean, they're dealing with individuals waiting anxiously in the next room. They're dealing with members of Parliament who want them to examine somebody for ministry whom they think is just a real prize. And the assembly says, no, you know, we wouldn't let this guy into a pulpit. And then there's also discussions and debates amongst the divines themselves as to really what qualifies as pastoral ministry versus an itinerant ministry and so on. So many different aspects to their discussion and debate that I think are illuminating.
What would you say, in your opinion, of course, why would you say that a class like this, or even a study such as this, is needed today? And we're talking about things that happened 500 years ago. How does that help us now?
So I think what's helpful is just the opportunity to sit down and consider the basics. Some of what we're going to cover should be kind of obvious to us, some priorities
sure.
in pastoral ministry. Nonetheless, every good pastor, like every good lawyer or doctor or whoever it might be, goes back and kind of looks at the basics again, and you know, reminds themselves of their most important principles. So we'll be doing some of that. I think it's also helpful to consider what we're looking for in a minister, since if we're Presbyterians, that's an activity that we're all engaged in a couple times a year or more, as we train interns, as we're doing the work of the presbytery and so on. And so asking, knowing what people have done in the past, knowing what really thoughtful men have done, who have examined more ministers than probably anybody in the PCA or the OPC or any other denomination ever will, hearing what they have to say about what they think qualifies as a good examination and a good way of treating somebody, I think it's very helpful on a practical level. And then I think while we can rejoice in what the Holy Spirit's taught us, it's really useful to hear what what he's taught others on the subject of preachers and preaching. And so gaining insights that are not chronologically bound, that aren't limited to our own time, I think are very, very helpful. I guess what I'm trying to say is church history is, you know, how we can all gain insights by traveling and
sure.
seeing other contexts. Church history is the poor man's travel guide. You know, we can sit there in this class by reading these books, by having these discussions. We can gain insights beyond ourselves that would not otherwise be possible, given the limitations of our own experience.
Do you think that's what reading does? Yeah. Do you think church history? And I know you're a church historian, so please don't take this the wrong way. But do you think church history is kind of become the redheaded stepchild in the pastoral arsenal of study?
Well, I mean, I wish that most seminaries would give church history a few more hours, and I think church history is really useful, and this might sound like megalomania, but really useful as
okay.
a unifying discipline. We can look at the history of pastoral care, the history of worship, history of doctrine, history of exegesis. There's a lot of things that we can bring together in history courses
yeah.
That can unify the discipline. But as well, church history has a lot to teach us to the extent that church history is not merely telling stories, but reading texts, there's a lot to learn from our forebears. And there's a lot of apologetic usefulness in history, too. That takes us farther afield from the GPTS as Pastoral Institute. But I do think that anyone who is ignorant of early church and Reformation history is going to be at a disadvantage in an apologetic confrontation.
Hmm. That's a great point. I know at Greenville Seminary we have ancient church, medieval church, Reformation church, modern church. So we have four full classes on covering the major epochs of church history, and they're very extensive. And I wasn't very good at it, I admit, but still enjoyed it. But I wasn't very good at it. One of my professors said, "You know, usually you're good at what you enjoy." I said, "Well, I don't know. I enjoy golf, and I'm not very good at that either." So, but yeah, I think you're right. I think it's important to study this because it helps frame our own approaches to things, correct mistakes that maybe we're making and trying to reinvent the wheel. Yeah. And I think that's in some sense part of the focus that you're trying to accomplish in this 1 week study of the assembly. And so, you know, as we kind of wrap things up, I realize this is, you know, really promotional, and those listening to this may be thinking, okay, well, why did I listen to this podcast? Well, number one, you listen to it to maybe become interested in coming to the Institute. There's no better way to do it, frankly. And number two, maybe get your appetite, if you can't come, get your appetite wet, kind of an allurement to look at church history, maybe this particular period as it relates to pastoral work, and you're maybe a pastor in your pastoral work. But Dr. Van Dixhorn, if you had to sell me, as it were, and come to this class to invest 1 week in the classroom in the middle of the summer when I could be golfing or going to the beach or any other thing, what would you say?
Well, I'm probably better at research than marketing, so I'm not sure if that's
okay.
The right thing at all. But
yeah, that's okay.
This is what I think is interesting about the course. This will be the first time that I'm teaching a course on the Westminster Assembly that's not focused on doctrine per se, but more on practice. And I'm taking the subjects that are not usually linked to or identified with the assembly and saying, what's the assembly doing here, saying about this? So in that sense, anyone who's had a course on the assembly before will almost definitely not have covered anything that we'll look at this week. And then the second thing is that all the material is fresh. I think with the exception of maybe one article, everything that I'll be presenting is either coming out in a new book or a new article. And so this will be a sneak preview of material that'll be coming out in the next year or so. So if people like sneak previews, if they like being ahead of the curve, well, there's that too then.
Yeah, it's great. I have every intention, at least right now, to be there. I'll probably audit it, but I think people would understand fully. I just graduated from seminary, and I think I'll just audit it. I'm kind of still decompressing from the intensity of the 4 years. But what kind of work is going to be involved as far as the students are concerned?
Well,
other than coming to class.
I think even people who are auditing would do well to do the reading ahead of time, which is not onerous. A few sermons by members of the assembly, snippets of books. There's a newly translated David Noe at Calvin College is translating, and I'm editing a series of books by Westminster Divines. So we're going to have a sneak preview of a book on pastoral theology written by a Westminster Divine. So doing that reading will help the auditors participate in the discussion. Those who are taking it for degree credit will have a series of short papers to write, as well as one more substantial paper. Those who are doing it for continuing education credit will have some brief reflective papers to write. And so it'll depend on what people are there for, and how much work they're going to do for the Institute. But hopefully everyone will endeavor to do some very edifying reading in advance to help them make the most of the week.
Absolutely. I think it's going to be a great week. whether you're auditing or taking it for credit in one way or another, I just think the things that we can glean out of this is going to be extremely helpful from, and especially from someone who's basically lived inside the minds of these men, as it were, for quite a while. Your background is obviously in this area, specifically. And if I remember correctly, you did your doctoral work on the assembly, the Westminster Standards, and that, and all of that. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So we're not talking about a class being taught by a guy who studied another guy who did the work. We're talking about a man who's actually done the work. And so it's almost first, as it were, firsthand information. And as he's already indicated on the program, kind of ahead of the curve, not been done yet. So so I would encourage
the
listeners.
That sounds a little too grand for my comfort level.
I understand. I'm not trying to embarrass you by any means. But I would encourage the listeners, if you're just a listener, but you have a pastor who might benefit from this, encourage him to come to the. If you are a pastor who listens to this, then I would encourage you to come to this. Talk to your session, see if they'll let you go. Maybe they'll even get the church to pay for it. I don't know. But take every opportunity to deal with and interact with some of these things that will help you as a minister today in the 21st century. There's a connection, and we stand on the history of our forefathers and the things that they have done, and we don't need to reinvent the wheel, as it were. What we need to learn from what they've done. And it'll help us going forward. The institute is August 1st to the 5th, right here in Greenville, South Carolina. It's actually in Taylor, South Carolina, but it's a stone's throw from Greenville. It's on the campus of Greenville Seminary, and so make a vacation out of it. You can connect this course with the Southern Presbyterian Theology class, which happens the very next week, and we'll do a podcast on that as well. So. Very beneficial, and I think time well spent in the big picture of pastoral life and ministry today. Dr. Van Dixhorn, any concluding remarks? Anything that, by the way, just for information, I did look for your syllabus, and they haven't posted it yet. That's why we have people wondering. So,
right,
throw that out there. Well, I'll actually try to get that corrected for you this afternoon.
That would probably help the students. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
But any final remarks?
No, Bill, nothing to add. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
Absolutely. Hold on just the line just a second as I wrap things up. And again, I just want to remind the listeners, this Summer Institute is the Westminster Assembly and Pastoral Care, and it's being held at this campus of Greenville Seminary August 1st through the 5th this year, 2016. So if you want to register for the Institute, it's very easy. Go to our website, gpts.edu/pastors. And there's a way to register right there on that page and get you all set up to come and enjoy a great week of learning with a man who knows from what he speaks on this particular subject. Coming up on the program, we'll be sitting down and talking. Who are we talking to on the program? I don't even have the right page in front of me, so that doesn't help anybody, including me. But as I mentioned before, I did update the lineup for the summer, and if my website, my internet would work, I would be able to tell you what's coming up. But anyway, if you want to know, it's very easy. Go to our website, confessingourhope.com, and click on the link coming up, and it'll give you the list all the way through the summer. So look forward to that and those broadcasts in the very near future. So until next time, when we... talk with whoever. I can't get the page to come up, so I don't know. We do thank you for listening to this particular edition of Confessing Our Hope, the podcast of Greenville Presbyterian Theological Seminary.